Good morning, KPCW listeners. I'm Andrea Buchanan.
And I'm John Burdick, and we're your hosts for today's Community Campfire, the show where we share stories about people who live here and showcase the talents of local and visiting musicians.
Coming up this hour, Amber Johnson shares the story of an inspiring Wasatch High School graduate who's been quietly spreading kindness for years. He started an anonymous kindness account a few years ago and finally revealed his identity at scholarship night last week.
And we have Andrea's story about Charlie Sturgis, also known as the godfather of single track or the minister of outdoor satisfaction. He's been in Park City since the 70s, and he's literally helped create the trails we use every day. He's also made 10 seconds of kindness a philosophy for trails as well as life.
Yay!
Yes.
Yay! And we also have some fun Friday fun as well with the weekend events, Facts to Make You Smarter. Stay
always
tuned for Coach Skinner, who will give us a skinny on sports. And we finish the hour with a special conversation with Brian Neff, a local musician who played a few tunes right here in the KPCW studios. But before we get any further into the show, what time is it?
It's time to hear from Madeline Jaquit.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Community Campfire are their own and do not reflect the views, opinions, or official policies of KPCW, its management, staff, or affiliated organizations. The content of this program is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement by KPCW of any opinions, products, or services discussed during the show.
This is Amber. I recently had a brutally honest sit-down with 11-year-olds Allie and Zoe, who gleefully roasted adulthood and explained why being a kid is way better.
Your back doesn't pop.
And you can touch your toes.
Yeah.
You also don't have to pay taxes.
Yeah, and you can see through, like, farther than your nose.
Also, you don't get, like, very chubby, because I feel like when they're always like, I can't eat this burger, it has too many carbs.
But
sad.
I don't care.
And like, we won't gain like a pound.
Yes, won't gain a pound.
Oh my goodness. Well, kids have a way of leading by example. Zoe and Allie were very clear about that. And this next story is a great reminder of how far a little kindness can go. For over 2 years, an anonymous Instagram account called Wasatch Kindness quietly lifted spirits and spread encouragement at Wasatch High School.
Turns out, senior Kohler Berkeley was behind it all. Amber has the story of how it started and how one young man turned quiet compassion into a lasting impact.
The scholarship goes to a graduating student who has demonstrated a heart of service and kindness to not only fellow students, but the community at large.
Among the many moments celebrated at Wasatch High School's Scholarship Night were over $400,000 in awards were handed out thanks to the Wasatch Education Foundation. One quiet recognition stood out. It was the Wasatch Kindness Scholarship, given to student Leah Rogers in recognition of her commitment to service and her outstanding character. But what made the moment truly remarkable wasn't the award itself, it was the person presenting it. For the past 2.5 years, Wasatch High School senior Kohler Berkeley has been the anonymous force behind the Instagram account Wasatch Kindness. I stumbled upon it by accident a couple of years ago when I had 3 teenagers at the high school, 2 of my own and a bonus exchange student. Social media is often filled with grandstanding and bullying, but Wasatch Kindness stood out as a rare bright spot, posting encouraging messages and offering students a safe place to anonymously share their struggles without judgment. Driven by curiosity, I messaged the account. The person agreed to a phone interview, but with one condition. His identity had to stay anonymous until he graduated. We spoke, I disguised his voice in the story, and promised a follow-up down the road. Last Monday night, in a packed auditorium, the curtain finally lifted. But unlike the Wizard of Oz moment, when the great and powerful wizard is revealed as smoke and mirrors, Kohler is no illusion. This humble, hardworking 18-year-old balances multiple jobs and activities, swim team, leadership roles in Future Business Leaders of America, Future Farmers of America, National Honor Society, and more. He was also the high school's Sterling Scholar winner in business and marketing at both the local and regional levels, a prestigious honor recognizing excellence in scholarship, leadership, and citizenship. Despite his many achievements, Kohler often felt like he didn't fit in. So in his sophomore year, he created Wasatch Kindness, building a community where students who silently struggled could find support and know they weren't alone. He never dreamed it would become what it is today. With over 1,000 followers and countless conversations, Wasatch Kindness is more than just a social media account. It's a quiet revolution led by one student who showed that kindness matters.
Yeah, it's actually been really unique because just going into it, I was like, hey, if I can help one person out, that's a big thing. But especially the first few months, we saw a lot of growth where you're increasing your followers by quite a lot, but also Instagram had different algorithms back then. So often you'd be reaching a million people for every 30 days, but now it's slowed down a little bit. But just seeing the change from then to now has been pretty impactful because it's led to quite a few different experiences.
Most of his conversations happen behind the scenes, giving students a place to vent anonymously about everything from relationships to depression, anxiety, and stress management. When heavier concerns surface, like thoughts of suicide, he has guided students toward the school counselors or professional hotlines. On Sundays, the account turns into a celebration of kindness, sharing anonymous compliments students send in about one another. Sometimes he's even the recipient.
Also, sometimes I'll get multiple anonymous messages that all go together. And I've seen that sometimes I don't get to know who that is, but there have been a few times where the student has then messaged me and said, hey, this was me. I really appreciate helping me, and it has gotten better. And I might not necessarily remember which message that was that I helped them with, but just seeing that like the positive impact has really helped them has been really impactful.
So how does that make you feel then?
Kind of the warm and fuzzy inside. It's pretty great.
Kohler and his girlfriend, Rebecca Hadlock, have known each other since elementary school, but it wasn't until the last couple of years that their bond deepened. As he poured his energy into helping others, Rebecca saw him transform.
I feel like he's been able to, I don't know the right word for this, I guess be more like personable to people, and also realize that he's good as he is. He doesn't have to do more. He's amazing as he is, and I feel like that's so hard for us teenagers to realize. But he was helping so many people through their struggles that he realized how good he has it and how amazing he is, that he knew that he was good enough. And I feel like that's what everyone needs to learn, and so he's teaching people that.
With all the time he has spent helping others, I wondered if Kohler might pursue a career in counseling. However, he told me he plans to serve a mission and study mechanical engineering at BYU. Through the Wasatch CAPS program, he recently developed a product to grow livestock feed anywhere in the world, proof that his drive to help others is rooted not just in words, but in innovation.
The intention is for it to be humanitarian-based, so then if there's a natural disaster in Africa or someplace that they don't have the resources, they're able to then produce feed to then help the livestock so then they can also have food. So just, it kind of gives me the ability to do something I love, which is helping people, but also add on to the ability to make something and also see a really big impact from that.
So what's next for the Wasatch Kindness account after Kohler graduates this week? Well, the spirit of kindness is far from over. After inviting students to submit applications, Kohler is confident he's found the right leader, someone ready to carry the mission forward, champion the student leadership class, and grow this powerful source of positivity that has become an enduring part of Wasatch High School.
So how does it make you feel to be walking away from something you felt like this?
In some ways it's a relief, and in some ways it's kind of like a sappy ending. It's been a lot of work, truthfully, but it's also been really, really rewarding and just being able to make a change. And so I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to start and run it, but I'm also excited to see how it ends up down the line and what change they can make.
The scholarship grew out of Kohler's role as a student liaison with the Wasatch Community Foundation, a position he accepted at the invitation of Vice Chair Kathy Carr. Serving as a bridge between students and adults, Kohler attended board meetings and community events. In its inaugural year, the foundation-sponsored scholarship drew more than 80 heartfelt essays from students eager to share how they're making a difference in their communities. Kathy shared that creating such an award was Kohler's dream. Now, with plans already underway to make the Kohler Berkeley Kindness Scholarship an annual tradition, that dream is poised to grow and inspire for years to come.
I don't think Kohler realizes his impact, and it's really special when it's a student that has impacted a community as much as he has. And all of us on our education board through the Community Foundation, we're just all so impressed with him. He's not boastful, he's not loud, he's just Kohler doing what he feels like is the right thing to do.
With all that he's learned, Kohler's message is clear. In a world that often feels divided, kindness is a conscious choice, one we can carry with us every single day. It's how we learn empathy, build connections, and support one another through life's challenges.
I think the biggest thing is that nothing is too big for them to get over, even if it feels like the end of the world, it's not. And that not everything is gonna be solved completely, but if you are doing the right things, you're gonna heal and you'll also help others along the way.
This is Amber Johnson for KPCW's Community Campfire.
Oh, what a great story. As a parent of two kiddos who will both be in middle school next year, this gives me hope. It really does. Not for just this generation, but humanity in general. Kindness wins, and it makes such a difference.
Yes.
Let's get on board, people.
And it's a kindness kind of day here at the Community Campfire. Our next story, Andrea, you got to talk with Charlie Sturgis, it's the second installment of Voices of History, where we tell the stories of people who have been here for decades and can speak on the transformation of Park City and the Wasatch back. He not only helped create the trail system that we use every day, but he also was dubbed 10 Seconds of Kindness, which is a reminder to be kind to the people you share the trails with.
Or the grocery store aisles, or in traffic.
Everywhere.
Anywhere, really. It pays to smile and say hello. It's something that makes this town unique, and Charlie really wants it to stay that way. I hope you enjoy hearing about this cool cat, Charlie Sturgis. Park City has come a long way from its roots as a mining town to the vibrant, bustling mountain community it is today. But beyond the slopes and storefronts, it is the people who have shaped this place, decade by decade, story by story by story. The Community Campfire invites you to help preserve the true essence of Park City, its history told in your words. We're creating a living time capsule, capturing the voices and stories of those who have witnessed the town's transformation. Whether you've been here for generations or arrived during the early ski boom, your stories matter. This is a celebration of our shared past, an homage to the people who built Park City, and a gift for those who will call it home in the years to come. So come gather around and tell us your Park City story. Charlie Sturgis has been a cornerstone of Park City since moving to the area in the 70s from Chicago in pursuit of all things mountains. Whether backcountry skiing, mountain biking, or rock climbing, exploring the mountains is how Charlie feeds his soul and in turn has changed the landscape of the Wasatch Back for the better. Some say his work with the trail system that goes for hundreds of miles and covers ground from the top of Jupiter Peak to the front door of Smith's is the reason Park City gets named best trails in the country, or maybe even the world.
I skied Snowbird in 1973, a year after it opened, and I thought I was a pretty good skier. And I got to the top of Snowbird in a typical Midwestern style with blue jeans on and whatnot. And in a pretty good storm. I got up there and I realized this is like way over my head. But on the other hand, I also sat there and went, well, this is pretty freaking cool. I left Chicago. I left a perfectly good girlfriend, straight A's in school. I left it, everything was just fine at home. I picked up and left.
Charlie said his straight A's went out the window once he realized his passion for the outdoors was growing. He managed to graduate from college, but he did so knowing he was going to do something with his life that wasn't taught in a classroom.
So this was my fourth college. and I literally did not have, when I had enough credits to graduate, I found out I had the credits to graduate. I did not have a major. Mm-hmm. So I had to really put another year into school and get a major and get out. And that's all I asked them. And I said, you know, I just need to get out of here. And they go, okay. So I graduated in political science, which I like philosophy and all that. And I'm kind of a little bit politically oriented, but it was just the fastest way out of school. I'm a terrible student.
Charlie happily took his degree in political science and philosophy, but he didn't go to work in an office with other people in suits and ties. He went to the mountains to work in a ski shop. It just happened to be one of the first companies offering backcountry skiing in the Wasatch Mountains.
No, I ended up getting out of college and I worked for a ski shop, and then I ended up working for Wasatch Touring, which was kind of novel in that they were, you know, 77, ski touring was just kind of, that idea was just really coming along. I mean, when I first started working for Wasatch Touring, every ski on the rack was a wood ski. And most of them, basically all of them, had no metal edges. And we were skiing little flipper boots, and we were really just the epitome of young, strong, and dumb. Mm-hmm. And we had a ball.
Charlie quickly realized that he had a knack for sales but wanted to do more with the shop. When the owners told him they were happy with the arrangements, he started to look for other opportunities, this time in the Wasatch back. And that's where fate stepped in.
Looking at, someone said, well, there's a job at White Pine Touring, which in those days was nothing more than the ski touring center. And it was owned by two guys who actually were getting ready, really trying to find a way out of it. White Pine Touring started in 1972 in White Pine Canyon in teepees and stuff. Yeah, if you go back to how we skied, you know, my first ski races were where the Cavalier parking lot is. And all the way up to the main buildings, and there were no main buildings back in those days.
Charlie soon realized that to make real profits in a touring shop, he needed to add mountain bikes, which in the 80s were just becoming popular.
We opened up with mountain biking up here, the touring center being part of the arrangement, went to year-round instead of 4 months a year, extended the guide season into summertime. And at the end of the day, the unique thing about White Pine that I really feel good about, we were probably the only outdoor retail shop that actually taught everything it basically sold. Mm-hmm. So very few shops educate.
Right.
And we educate on avi gear, skate lessons, what if mountain bike, you know, lessons. So we were teaching everything we were trying to sell. Mm-hmm. And make sure we had good, safe users out there.
So in 1985, Charlie and his wife Kathy decided to buy White Pine Touring and make a year-round business out of it. The early days of White Pine had challenges, and as with any business involving snow, if there isn't any, the business suffers.
So at that point, we'd just gotten married. Kathy had just graduated from MBA school. And so anyhow, we really felt like, okay, we're going to go up here and give this a go. And the first 2 years were really pretty problematic, and then we had no snow until like January. We had 40 employees because we had the touring center here, and we ran the touring center, the Mountain Dale golf course, and we had no snow. We had no way of doing business, you know.
They hung on through the first couple of years and challenging weather issues and moved the business to Main Street and lived near the shop. At the time, White Pine Touring was located in the Quicksilver building across from the restaurant Chimayo. It was a small shop, but a lot of big ideas and dreams, and Charlie's insistence that the mountains were meant for biking as much as skiing came out of it.
Yeah, it wasn't much bigger.
That room there.
And everything was on ropes and pulleys and hanging on the water sprinkler pipes. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it was like every day was a punt, you know, where it's going to go, how we're going to make that fit, you know. It was amazing, but it was really fun, and we actually did, you know, like mountain biking, we actually sold a hell of a lot of bikes out of that shop in the late 80s. I mean, we were selling like 300 bikes a summer, which is a lot of bikes.
White Pine Touring on Main Street became a destination as much as a rental shop. His friend, Matt Linden, remembers the shop being a place where locals would go, come snow or shine.
Charlie's shop always catered to locals to the point where on Christmas Eve they would always
have a bucket of hot toddies there, and I would always go there on Christmas Eve and do my Christmas shopping and have a drink with Charlie and Kathy, and it was just kind of the local way, and it kind of set the pace for Main Street that way.
After many years of building White Pine Touring, they sold the business to Jan's Outfitters and continued working with the company for a few years. Charlie was ultimately tapped to be the executive director of Mountain Trails Foundation, which gave him the opportunity to focus solely on developing the extensive trail system that now defines Park City's recreational landscape. Charlie's work with Mountain Trails created the very trails that hikers, bikers, skiers, runners, walkers, bird watchers, strollers, horse lovers, dog walkers use every day. Some of them are paved, most are dirt, but what they have in common is Charlie Sturgis's passion for 10 seconds of kindness, a philosophy that Charlie uses on the trails or at the post office.
Well, you know, when you leave Utah, you know, especially, you're kind of weird because you say hi to everybody. You know, you're in Chicago and you say hi to everybody. You sit down at the bar stool and say hi to the guy. People don't do that elsewhere, and we're getting more of that not doing it than we are doing. And that's really disappointing. And a little bit of it is, it's hard to believe it could be pandemic hangover, but it kind of is. And I make it a point. I never let anyone go by me on a trail without saying hi. Yeah. In fact, when people don't respond, I say it twice. Yeah, exactly. I've got to like, butt head, say hi.
Charlie told me during our conversation that in 2023, he was diagnosed with throat cancer and underwent treatment and is on the other side of the scary life-altering diagnosis.
But I kind of consider myself very lucky, one, because it was discovered accidentally, and two, the process, maybe as brutal as it might have been, was over quickly. Spent 7 weeks in chemo and radiation, and then they just cut you loose. And yeah, you're kind of a shit show when you get done. I basically was clipping off one driveway a day of going up the street. You know, that was as much energy as I had. I can remember getting to the top of our street, which is kind of a steep hill, and going, I'm here. I can't believe it. Yeah.
When I called Charlie to verify something for the story, he told me he was rock climbing. And when he came down, he could answer my question. And I thought, I hope Charlie never comes down, never stops climbing, and most of all, always spreads his sparkly, contagious energy everywhere he goes. When you're out on the trails, just remember to say hello to your neighbor and spread that 10 seconds of kindness. It's the Park City way and the Charlie Sturgis way. This is Andrea Buchanan with KPCW's Community Campfire.
Oh, wow. That was an awesome story.
Thank you. I love you, Charlie. If you're out there listening, you're the best.
And I love Charlie, too. He's been a staple in a lot of the videos of the Follies. And another, besides 10 seconds of kindness, he also came up with the poop fairy for everybody that's out on the trails and doesn't pick up after their dogs. There's a warning there, too, is that the poop fairy doesn't exist.
Oh, I've seen that.
So, thank you, Charlie. That was great. We're about to honor another underwriter, and let's hear from another campfire kid. We'll be right back.
Earlier in the community campfire, 11-year-old Zoe made a solid case for why being a kid totally beats adulting, though she did admit it's not all cartoons and cookie dough. Her biggest gripe? Grown-ups don't always take her opinions seriously.
The bad stuff is you have kind of no freedom of what you want to do. Like, this is what my mom does. She'll ask me a question, and then she won't let me choose the answer. She'll be like, what do you want for dinner? And I'll be like, ooh, mac and cheese sounds good. And she's like, no, I was thinking salad. Or no, I was thinking like grilled chicken or something. And I'm like, well, then why'd you ask me?
All right, welcome back to the community. I love these kids. All right, I'm John Burdick, sitting down here with Andrea Buchanan, my co-host today.
Good morning. If you're just tuning in, we've had quite the morning with Amber's story about a Wasatch High School student who started an anonymous kindness account, and my story about Charlie Sturgis, the godfather of single track and 10 seconds of kindness. Now it's time to check in with Coach Skinner. What's the skinny on sports this week, Coach?
Hey, good morning, Andrea. Good morning, John. Are y'all ready for another scintillating skinny on sports
this week? Yes, I am. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Well, okay. Okay, so where we left off last week was the Park City Boys lacrosse team was about to start their championship game. They were playing against Brighton Bengals last Friday. They ended up losing in a heartbreaker, 10-9 in that championship game. But we just wanted to circle back on that.
Such a great season,
exactly.
Right?
Congrats to them on that great season. So high school sports are kind of wrapping up, but we do want to give out a shout out to a couple tennis players here in the area. Wasatchback senior Beck Neuberger and Park City freshman Thomas Rogalski. They both had very successful seasons this year and made a really good showing at the state level. So looking much forward to following Thomas, just a freshman.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's
so exactly. Cool. Mm. Exactly. You know, and I can't believe it. We're already talking football. You know, we're just 2.5 months away from the season opener. That's like, what, 8 weeks, 10 weeks? I don't know.
Does it ever
August
end?
15th is the Wasatch versus Park City High School football season opener. So, but that's really it going on for high school sports. We'll be taking a little bit of a break on that throughout the summer here, but we do want to focus on some other local sports activities going on. We got the Park City Trails Series. That is a 3-race series that goes on here in Park City. Very popular event. It's held throughout the summer. The 3 races are a 5K, a 10K, and a half marathon. So it kind of builds on each other. The races are all based out of Quinn's Junction. And the first race is the 5K, which is going to be next Saturday, June 7th. And, you know, I actually toyed with the idea of signing up for this. Then I went, you know, thank God I work Saturday morning. So darn, I couldn't subject myself to that.
I mean, you almost got me. I'm like, okay, I'll do the 5K with you.
Exactly. So, yeah, so lots of local events going on. Let us know if we've missed your event. Give us a shout out, campfire@kpcw.org, or go to the KPCW app and do the Tell KPCW, send us a message that way. So on the national scene, the French Open is still underway. It got underway earlier this week. All the top seeds are still alive in this. So Jannik Sinner on the men's side, Aryna Sabalenka on the women's side. And in the NBA, Oklahoma City Thunder booked its trip to the finals earlier this week. They knocked out the Minnesota Timberwolves in 5 games. The Knicks stayed alive last night with a win over the Pacers. Game 6 will be played in Indianapolis on Saturday night, and Game 7, if needed, will be in New York City on Monday. And I'm going to put on my conspiracy hat there and say there is no way in the world the NBA is going to let Oklahoma City and Indiana be in the finals and knocking out the Knicks. Conspiracy bill here in full goodness, force.
Okay. I mean, one of my fun facts for today, do you know that May 30th, 1911 was the first Indianapolis 500?
Yeah, they just did the 109th running last weekend. Alex Palou won. He is just dominating the Indy circuit, but yeah.
That's wild. And I guess the original winner from the first, do you know who actually won the first one?
No. I only go to A.J. Foyt. I can't do anything before A.J. Foyt.
Ray Haroon, and his car was a Marmon Wasp.
Good old Ray.
Yeah, good old Ray. First winner of the Indy. Sorry, you got me with the Indianapolis.
All good. So one last thing. The NHL finals are now set. The Edmonton Oilers knocked out the Dallas Stars last night. So it will be the Edmonton Oilers and Florida Panthers. That finals starts on Wednesday. That's June 4th. You know, and it just seems right. We got to get the Stanley Cup back in Canada. We can't have that thing running around Florida. So let's go Edmonton.
That does not make sense.
All right. Well, that's your Skinny on Sports. Thanks to Madeline Jaquit, as always, for helping me to compile the info. I'm Coach Skinner, and I'm just wondering, is flipping burgers on the barbecue, is that actually a workout?
For some people, depending on how many pounds your burger is. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, coming up this week, we've got some pretty cool events going on in and around town. Andrea, what do we got?
Yeah, the 4th annual Trails Trash and Tunes is being held tomorrow. A public trail cleanup and weed pull event in Silver Creek Village starting at noon in the Silver Creek Park. And it will have prizes, information booths, a food truck, and a live band, as well as a scavenger hunt for kids and Kids Corner presented by the Summit County Library. That sounds like fun. And then there's also the Summit Pride kickoff march and concert starting at 4:30. Meet at the Park City Mountain Resort base and march to Park City.
City Park,
where there will be a drag show, food, and both alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages available for purchases. And Salt Lake City singer-songwriter Talia Keys will be performing. It's fun fact time.
Yes, it is.
What do you have for us today?
I love this. Okay, so do you know what today is? Today is, let me see if you recognize this. 1959 classic there, Harry Belafonte. It is National Hole in a Bucket Day.
I mean,
I didn't make this up.
Help me.
Yeah, hole in a bucket.
Who thinks of these things?
Apparently, this calendar of national holidays every single day of the year. This song originated in Germany in the 1700s. And then right here is Harry Belafonte and Odetta singing it from the Harry Belafonte Show in 1959. It actually hit the UK charts. It was number 32 in There Lies a... Do you remember this?
Nope.
Okay. My dad was a huge Harry Belafonte fan.
Me too, but I don't remember this song.
Anyway, Hole in the Bucket. It's a Hole in the Bucket Day, so you know what you can do if you have a hole in your bucket? You can fill it with concrete and put a PVC pipe in it and turn it into an umbrella stand, or you can turn it into a compost bin. This is another suggestion from the interwebs, or my personal favorite, if it is a hole in somebody's bucket, what you want to do is fill it up by saying something kind to somebody today.
Nice. Hole in the bucket.
And whatever you're doing to celebrate Hole in My Bucket Day, use the hashtag Hole in My Bucket Day, and you can get on socials and see what everybody else is doing. Other things that happened on May 30th, Lincoln Memorial was dedicated in Washington, D.C. on today. And in 2008, this goes out for everybody, right? HBO's comedy series Sex and the City, starring Sarah Jessica Parker, was released today.
The movie. It was amazing. I remember it very well.
And the number one hit from 1980. Any guess?
From
1980. The Lip Sync was the name of the band. Won't you take me to Funky Town?
Lips Inc. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
There you go, Andrea. What other musical fun facts do we have?
Well, my personal favorite, the Beatles' White Album. March 30th, 1968, they began working on the White Album.
Nice.
I mean, what is better than that? The band recently returned from a trip to India where they studied transcendental meditation with Maharishi Mahesh, the yogi, and wrote 19 of the songs that would end up on the album. Sessions would last 6 months, beginning with the track Revolution, while the resulting double album was released to broad acclaim and commercial success around the world.
Well, there it is. That's your day in music history. We'll be right back after honoring some underwriters with an interview from Brian Neff, who sat down with Mitch and I here in the KPCW studios.
Amber here. We're circling back with 11-year-old Zoe, who's about to trade her top of the food chain status in elementary school for a spot at the very bottom in middle school. Should someone warn her it's not just a new grade, it's a whole different beast?
There's a very different age range. So like I'll see like these preschoolers and they'll be like pretending they're little animals and they'll like try to attack us, and it's the funniest thing, and it's kind of fun to be with them. So I don't know what it'll be like next year.
For today's musical sesh on the Community Campfire, our guest is Brian Neff. He's bringing Flamenco Fire to the KPCW studios. Spanish classical soul with the edge of progressive rock.
Brian, we're stoked to have you here. Welcome to the Community Campfire.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Let's kick things off with a little origin story. You've taken your guitar around the world. How did this journey start, and when did you realize it was more than just a hobby?
You know, I've been fortunate to have a guitar in my hand in some capacity since I was about 4 years old. And so there's inherently a unique, intimate connection I have with the instrument that it feels like an extension of myself. I picked up guitar for the first time with a mentor in Australia, definitely encouraged by my parents, my mom especially.
Mm-hmm.
And as I moved throughout the world, you know, I started with classical repertoire and quickly started playing classical repertoire with Spanish influence. There's a quite strong association with guitar and sort of Spanish background, especially if you're learning classical repertoire. And I had a mentor at a time in Switzerland who had just started actually learning some flamenco himself. And so he turned me on to more of the Spanish classical repertoire, and I shortly after that heard of some artists that were much more of what you might call traditional flamenco, people like the public might recognize Paco de Lucia, Paco Peña, and others. It wasn't until, again, another mentor of mine, you know, I'm going fast through many decades almost here, who also was a shredhead, he introduced me to a flamenco metal duo, Rodrigo Gabriela. And this is where I started to realize, oh, you don't just have to stay in the classical instrument, you can start to fuse styles, you can cross genres, you can pull from the blues, you can pull from rock. And over my experience of playing guitar, I picked up the electric guitar and was wowed by the amplification of what that could do. And I thought, well, how do I bring that power, that energy to something that's typically perceived as quieter? I've found myself navigating this niche of kind of world music, as I generally describe, mm-hmm. with a Spanish guitar emphasis. And so I've studied classical, you know, I've pulled from blues and classic rock and some metal. It keeps the journey for certain exciting, especially since there's so much that you're only limited by your creativity.
Yeah. And so,
when did you realize it was more than just a hobby, that you wanted to do this full time?
I actually played for just myself and my family for probably about 10 years. And it was in high school when I first started playing gigs, and it was instant. I was hooked. And it wasn't for necessarily the audience. It was something about the showmanship and that I had to refine my ability to play, right? And being able to play clean notes, not that I was a sloppy player technically before that, I was really quite proficient having the classical background and having mentors as well as being sort of self-taught. But I got hooked and I just kept pursuing opportunities for gigs. And so that is also my desire to perform and play for others. I street bus quite a bit. And that's the easiest way that if you just want to play and you love playing, the street is your own. And so that's a great way that I also make connections for private gigs and whatnot.
Someone could be like walking by and just, you know, you can catch their ear and all of a sudden you're in a million different places. I'm curious about your songwriting process, because you probably, you know, with all the different mentors and stuff, were learning a lot of the classical repertoire. And so when did you start making your own songs and when did you start writing?
It was around the time I actually started performing live, because I realized that as much of my repertoire as was classical or Spanish guitar, how do I make this exciting for the listener? Mm-hmm. Right? I want to create a connection. I needed to diversify what I could play for an audience, and my ability was driven by a connection. And so this led me to kind of learn some blues pieces, learn some country, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think what has helped create that connection, whether it's playing on the street, is underpinned ultimately by like a lot of emotion that words can't really convey, right? It's like the wavelength of your instrument. That's an extension of you.
Mm-hmm. So. Cool, man.
Let's get into some music, Brian. You want to play something live here? Give a taste of the Spanish classic meets progressive rock magic for our listeners?
Absolutely.
What do you want to play?
I'll be playing Orenda. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And that was so freaking good. Wow.
How did you do that? Okay.
You got some fast fingers, man.
Thank you. All right. If you're just joining us, we're sitting down with Brian Neff, Spanish classic guitarist meets progressive rock musician. Kind of crazy question. You're known for your energetic stage presence. Have you ever broken a string mid-playing?
Fortunately not. Not yet.
I'm sorry to put that out.
Yep.
I've broken many a nails, though, which if you look at these things, they're like claws. And if you break a nail, it's just as bad as a broken string when you're playing a classical.
Of course.
Yeah. So. Some listeners out there might not know why you have nails for classical. Can you explain a little bit about the nails in playing in that way?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a level of intimacy with the guitar and the instrument. And particularly when you have nylon strings, as opposed to all of them being steel, by having different shapes of your nails, it allows you to pluck the strings in different ways, getting different intonations, different tones, warm, cold colors, brightness, and the instrument itself with the wood being classical as opposed to like purely amplified, not to say electric guitars, you know, they're made of wood too, but how it resonates is also dramatically influenced by even just like, are your nails oily? Are they smooth? Or are they pretty brittle and rough?
Mm-hmm.
And so all those things just help add to the experience, whether you're creating or listening.
Yep. So are you right-handed? Is that your picking hand?
Yes.
For our listeners out there who might not know, Brian probably has very long fingernails on one hand and then short on the other so he can play. So you can always open a bag of chips, no problem, right?
Maybe with my left because I don't want to break my nails.
That's good to know. I've learned something new here on the community campfire. Another crazy question here. If you had to form a dream band from all different genres, people living or dead, who's in your band?
I would have to probably take Gabriella from Rodrigo y Gabriella, just because I think she's such a role model and had such a profound impact on the percussive elements of that last piece, Orenda, that I composed, as well as probably someone like Paul Gilbert, who's played in a number of bands, but he's a guitar virtuoso. I think it would just be phenomenal to almost just accompany him with rhythm, while he just did some melodic solo.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely phenomenal. And I may just keep it there because we have a percussive element and
the trio sounds perfect.
And,
huh?
Yeah, a trio with an electric guitar. I think we could have ourselves a new wave of music.
What's next for you? Do you have any upcoming shows? Do you have any songs that you're about to release? What's next for Brian?
I'm in the process of recording one new piece. It is actually kind of called Triple Threat, mainly because it's composed of a lot of different triplets. Rhythmically, it's quite intriguing and interesting as a composer, as well as hopefully to the listener. But then as we roll out into kind of late spring and summer here, you should definitely catch me on Main Street. I play 3 to 4 times a week, a mix of weekends and weekdays, usually between 6 to 9 p.m., and then private events as well. So if you're in the need for some kind of world musician, solo, as well as if you're looking for accompaniment, I play with ensembles, quartets, I've played with bands as well. So if you're needing some loud, powerful music on the electric guitar, I can fill in for that as well.
Where do people find you? Website, social, where?
Best place is on the gram.
Instagram, yeah.
At B_NEFF.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We'd love to hear some more music from you. What do you got in store for us to wrap up the show today?
Got a song called Juegos.
Juegos, okay. Yep. Well,
Juegos, it's not huevos, right?
Nope, not eggs.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for being on the community campfire. Thank you. that's a wrap on today's Community Campfire. If you missed any part of it, go to our website, kpcw.org, and the Community Campfire is right under the Shows tab.
And please subscribe to our podcast, The Community Campfire, wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to hear from you. Please send us story ideas. You can email us at campfire@kpcw.org.